Janet Smith will be with me in the second hour. She's the president of Tallahassee Community Chorus, talking about what's going on with the chorus these days. And a repeat of a conversation I had with Dr. Dave Gusak. He has a new book coming out next month entitled The Frenzied Dance of Art and Violence. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
We're having a great time already. It's only the, you know, like the first couple of seconds into this show, and I'm so excited that you're a part of it, because I intend to bring to you some remarkable conversations with some very talented people who are among us, the rest of us slobs. But you got people like Jan Smith, who, my goodness, is not only a devoted vocalist, member of Tallahassee Community Chorus. She has served faithfully as the president of this fine organization that, whether you're into choral music or not, step back for a minute and consider that so much of what goes on in this town is benefited by organizations like TC Chorus. And that's simply because the chorus, I mean, is stellar in its achievements, and their quality of performance is unparalleled and recognized worldwide for their contributions in this whole business of choral music. But she's the one who really makes sure that the lights are on. How about that? And that people show up on time for rehearsals and, you know, all of the admin that goes into taking an organization of volunteers, by the way, that can, you know, range in number from, you know, a couple of hundred people, nearly 300 people at one time or another. These days it's tough because you've got the rehearsal hall over there at St. John's telling them that they can't have more than 150 people gathered in their rehearsal area there the church provides them that they pay for. I don't know. It's there's so much going on behind the scenes that has nothing to do with musical performance, but it has impacted then the chorus's ability to fulfill their mission. You know, they had one concert canceled last year, and now this one that was scheduled here for January this year, it got nixed. For, you know, I mean, people have this abundance of caution attitude, and so there you go. But I'll say this, any of us who have endeavored to create something, and I don't care whether it's a personal thing or if you're part of a team or some large-scale organization, if it's an event and you've put in hundreds of hours and money and thought and, oh my gosh, and then it gets pulled out from under you. Yeah, that's pretty tough. Well, that's where they're at. But knowing the kind of people we're talking about, and Jan's going to bring us up to date on it, they're undaunted. They will just lower their heads, take a deep breath, and they've got another show scheduled for April. And let's believe that that will come together as it has been planned. So you're going to learn a lot more there about the chorus and what they're up to, and get into some of Jan's personal history with it, because it is pretty interesting stuff. And then in this first hour, I've got Dr. Gussack. Dave is such a fabulous guest because he really comes to us with so many aspects of the various works that he's involved in, all having to do with art therapy, and particularly in his case, art therapy education. So having served over there at Florida State University for many years in the art therapy education department of education, he has contributed sizably then to the well-being of many people in the field, both those who are practicing currently and those who are getting their education, getting their training. So this latest book that's coming out, The Frenzied Dance of Art and Violence, this is his latest, possibly his last. He says he's I don't believe him when he says it, but this is a remarkable book, and it's coming out in March. It will be available on Amazon. Again, the title, The Frenzied Dance of Art and Violence. And it has, as some of the subtext describing this book for us, this statement: some artists have an inclination towards violence, with art helping them mitigate or redirect their destructive energy. Interesting statement. For others, their art helps them gain power over or make sense of violent environs. So basically, this book delves into the exploration of the violence that is either part of the world or even dominates the world that we're a part of in some fashion, or those of us who find ourselves driven with a lot of violent tendencies, and those violent tendencies being expressed and mitigated, as it says here, through their art. And so author Dave Gussack, explores those questions, and then as well those who are in fact violent perpetrators, criminals who have acted out their violence, and they see art as simply a mirror that perpetuates their own psychopathic cycles. It's an interesting study, and it's one that I think you would find interesting yourself if you are inclined to pursue, along with Dr. Gussack, the psychological and sociological perspectives of violence and aggression. So he'll be with me here in this first hour to talk about his career and about this book. I think you're going to enjoy having a chance to hear from him once again, as has been our pleasure. He's been a guest with us so many times. I had a couple of announcements for you. Let's see here. What do I got? A quick reminder regarding Witness to History. This is the Holocaust Remembered by Florida Survivors. We had Barbara Goldstein with us last week. This is an exhibit that brings to us the photos from World War II involving the Nazis who carried out their murderous plans against European Jews and others. Some groups, some governments chose to try to stand up against it. Others just sort of looked the other way, and others cooperated with it. So in this exhibition, you'll find examples of perpetrators, bystanders, victims, and upstanders, those who said, no, we're not going to go along with this. It retells how the actions of individuals, groups, and governments contributed to the Holocaust, and explores the reactions of Florida survivors to the events as they unfolded. Now, this happens starting March the 15th and runs through the end of April, and it's at Tallahassee Community College, and it's in their Workforce Development Building out there at TCC. So the March 15th through April 30th, Witness to History, the Holocaust Remembered by Florida survivors. What else do I have for you here as well? Oh, we've got Representative Allison Tant. She's going to be with us next week. So she is, of course, representative for the Florida House and serving as representative of District 9 currently. Native Floridian, born in Jacksonville, graduated from FSU. So we're going to have a conversation with Allison Tant next week. Hopefully that'll all come together because, of course, you know, we're midstream here with the session and all. But that's about it for the moment. Stay with me. I've got Dave Gussack coming up right after this.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
David Gussack is a professor for the Florida State University Graduate Art Therapy Program. He is also the project coordinator for the FSU Florida Department of Corrections Art Therapy in Prisons Program. If you are a first-time listener, well, you're going to want to stay with us through the rest of this hour because Dr. Gussack has presented extensively internationally and nationally on forensic art therapy and art therapy in forensic settings. Among his numerous journal and chapter publications, he has also authored his own books, including, among others, Art on Trial, Art Therapy for Capital Murder Cases, published by Columbia University Press, and Art and Art Therapy with the Imprisoned, subtitled Recreating Identity, and that was published by Routledge Publishing. He is our guest today, and it is a pleasure to welcome my brother, Dr. David Gussack.
Oh, man, it's great to be here. I was thinking back on this. I think this is my fourth time here.
You are a recurring guest, and we have a very short list. For those uninitiated to the topic of art therapy, we're going to get to that here, particularly in regard to your contributions to the field as an art therapy educator. Mm-hmm. And in your own right, an artist. And I have to reference something that our listeners may or may not be aware of. But you had posted a very tender, I thought, a very personal tribute to an individual who was particularly contributive, you might say instrumental. I think you said instrumental. I don't know if you actually said the word instrumental, but I'm going to say instrumental. In your development as an artist, this, I think, high school teacher basically said, "Do what you love. Do what you're good at doing." And this wonderful interaction then that goes on.
Yeah, I mean, to give a little bit more context, thank you for bringing that up. I hadn't planned on talking about this because it was one of those posts that I had to write. I had just found out that Jay Pilevsky had passed. A couple of weeks before, and I found that out indirectly through a message that was sent to me. And Jay, I had gone to high school many years ago, and I was what you might call an uninvested student. I used to get in trouble a lot, mostly for stupid mistakes, not for anything nefarious. Well, nothing that I got caught about for, but certainly things that I shouldn't have always been doing. But I wasn't exactly invested in my education, except for my art classes. You know, it's the old story. We gravitate towards what we love. Mm. And Jay Pilewski was my drawing and painting teacher for a couple of years, different years in high school.
And where was this?
This was in New York. Okay. This was up in, I went to Lakeland High School in Westchester, New York, right near Yorktown. Uh-huh. And he was one of those art teachers that didn't base his work on discipline-based work. It was more of, you're going to be invested in the art. You're going to become part of the art. You're going to enjoy the art. You're going to get something out of it. Mm-hmm. Everyone who comes to my class, as long as you participate, you get an A. So don't worry about the grade. It's not about creating what might be earth-shatteringly great art. Mm-hmm. It's about you creating what you need to create. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting with him in the hallway one time talking, because we used to love talking with him. And it was, you know, his studio and his class was where we can go that would allow us to be who we were. Huh. And it was where I felt the most comfortable. It was where I felt the most welcomed. And I was sitting there speaking with him, and we were trying to discuss what I was going to be doing, because I was graduating high school. I didn't really have much of a direction. I wasn't really a strong student, so I didn't know how I was going to get to college. And he said, well, look, you like to interact with people. You like people. You have a way of working with people. You don't really care for doing art itself, but what about using art? Why don't you put it together and become something like, oh, I don't know, like an art therapist? Huh. And I'm like, art therapist? Art therapy? Is that such a thing? He goes, no, I don't think so. I've never heard about it, but you can make it. You can make it be what you want to be and do that. You know, make it work. And all of a sudden I had this direction. I'm like, I could do something with my art. And I got to college and sure enough found out there's this thing called art therapy. Wait a minute. And so I called up Jay Pilewski, and I had stayed in touch with him all these years. But I called him up like within a year or 2 years later and said, guess what? I'm pursuing art therapy. There is such a thing. It does exist. And I'm doing this because of you. And he said, well, of course you're doing it because I told you to. He was so
unabashed.
Oh, my God. He was so funny. And he was brilliant. He quit shortly afterwards. He retired shortly afterwards because he had done his 20 years because he wanted to pursue his own art and his own work.
Yeah.
But I stayed in contact with him all these years. And he always took such pride in what his students were accomplishing. And so I would go and speak with him, or I would call him on the phone. And not only would we talk about what I was doing, he would just be so enthusiastic, but he would tell me about what some of the classmates had done. We're talking 35, 38 years ago, and he's remembering all of this. I last saw him a couple of years ago where I went back to New York, and I surprised him by stopping by the shop. And it was like we picked up right where we left off, the same type of bantering. I gave him some books. I had mentioned that story a number of different times in articles and in book chapters about how I found art therapy, and it was because of him. So I blame him for everything that I've done, for ill or for nil. And it was just great to see him. So I had intended on going to New York this fall, like I'll try to do, to go see my family, and I had intended to go see him. So I was really, really affected by reading about that and realizing that, boy, it just felt, you know, that the world was less bright and less quirky and less, you know, it was just so, and I think part of what we take is, you know, I'm an educator now. I've been an educator for 24 years, 20 years here. You know, I was an art therapist for 7 years before that, so I've been in the field for 30 years. But, you know, I think being a therapist and being a good educator is the same thing. You learn to listen, you learn to pay attention, and you learn to be the mirror for what that person needs. And that's what I learned from Jay. And I was reflecting back on Jay, and I remembered him having long curly hair, okay, and a beard and mustache. Wait a minute. And he would wear these quirky flowery shirts. Hold it just a moment. The fact that he was 6'2 is besides the point. We were, you know, well, maybe he wasn't that tall. He just looked that tall to me. But I'd like to think that I hopefully had become the type of teacher that Jay was, using the art to connect with people, recognizing the value of connection through the art and through the relationship.
Talking with Dr. David Gusak, our good friend, who has, for his many years, contributed sizably to the welfare of others, like his own mentor. Folks, you stay with me. We've got more with this great guy right after this.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no
Witten
longer
Glass
have access
has been
to
taking care of business since
programs.
1945.
As a result,
when you call Witten Glass,
while
you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals.
Join us in giving generously
the
during
best,
this critical
like
time.
Like Witten's top of the line bag closures
feed
that provide
children
style
and families
luxury at an affordable
go
price.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass.
And where you can
we'll
donate.
Help you design
your
it and install
will go directly to
Witten
these
Glass,
charities
the first
that do
name
so much
glass
to help the needs
call
of so many.
Call 222-5781.
Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're talking with Dave Gusek. That's really what gets us all messed up, is that we are so locked up into trying to be something that, God help us, none of us are really very good at being.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that all my students for 25 years will tell you the same thing, that I use this statement over and over again, and I had this cut out and put over my computer when I was running my doctoral dissertation. And one of the things that I think is important for us to remember is that perfect is the enemy of good enough. And if we're willing to make those mistakes, you know, demonstrate our limitations, but also how do we overcome those struggles? How do we work through that? Our role as an educator, our role as a therapist, our role as a person who could be present with somebody is valuable, in that we can demonstrate that it's okay to have insecurities and make mistakes. My students know that. I think they would certainly, I think their first reaction when they see me is, this? This is what's going to teach me?
I'm paying for this.
But yeah. Then it's a different realm. I mean, you know, they need to recognize that we connect on so many different levels. And the nice thing is I get to also connect through the art as well, which gives me a nice in.
Well, that is the point, isn't it? That you've done exactly what Jay instructed you to do.
I hope so.
He said, go and do that. Go be that. Yeah. And he said so in a sort of prophetic manner. Did you find out that it was a thing? But you didn't just take that opportunity in hand. You took your role in the field to another level. You know, it's one thing to say, I'm going to be an art therapist. And then you said, yeah, I'm going to be an art therapist, and I'm going to pursue my own art, but I'm also going to move the field, the education
I
of.
I hope so.
And you're doing that continuously. You've written how many books? Last count, 10, 20?
My sixth book is coming out next year. It's my last book. And I'm saying this on air because nobody believes me when I say this.
I don't believe you.
Sixth and final book.
I'm not believing you
year.
Now.
It's true.
No, you're lying.
Because I hate writing.
Yeah,
I do.
And that's unfortunate because you're very good at that.
No, I appreciate that. I'm compelled to write. Yeah. That's why this is my last book. I've got nothing else to say. And I'm glad. I appreciate you saying that. I'm gratified to hear you say that. That we're elevating the field. And I've chosen a particular niche. I mean, I focus on art therapy in prisons. I focus on art therapy in corrections and in forensics. And I've been. Well, we make our own luck. So it's being tenacious and putting yourself out there, taking the risks, allowing people to chop your head off because your neck is up a little too high.
Yeah.
You know, and you put yourself out there. And by that, I mean the organizations and systems that we become a part of. You know, the fact that it's taken me, here's a little story. I was getting some paperwork signed. We had just taken 20 months to negotiate the contract between Florida State University and Florida Department of Correction. I had just stepped down as chair of the department. You know, administration abhors a vacuum. And so immediately I started working with the Department of Corrections to develop this contract. And it took about 18 to 20 months to develop it. I was in the process of hiring two art therapists for the full-time positions to work in, at that time, the four prisons. And I had gotten an administrator to sign some paperwork. And I went back to him and said, thank you for signing that. it was like 2 or 3 weeks later, thank you for signing that. We've just gone ahead and offered the jobs to those two art therapists. And he said, wow, that was fast. And I said, yeah, it's only taken me 20 years to get here. You know, it's nobody sees all the efforts and all the research that happens. But I'm also happy that it's not that they're seeing that work happening. It's that they're, you know, we're allowing this opportunity for other people to put themselves out there and do the work.
Indeed. You know? The reality is that for any of us who are listening to you right now and say, God, you know, I'm no artist. I can't even draw a straight line.
No one asked you to.
I mean, that's true. And there isn't a paycheck associated with that, so we're all good here. You're talking about the 20 years. Whether it's true or not, it's attributed to Picasso having said, yeah, you know, I drew this little thing on the napkin, the story, and she says, well, how much, you know, $30,000 for this little napkin drawing. And she's like, whoa, wait a minute. You did that in like 2 minutes. He's, yeah, but it took me 40 years to figure out how to do it.
You're paying for
minutes.
The 40 years.
Exactly. Right. So we should be advised that whether or not we find ourselves particularly, we'll say, talented, we can identify with you in as much as we have certain gifts and talents of some kind. You know, with me, it's my mouth. I know how to talk.
Yes.
And I talk at length, and my family suffers under this constantly. And so it's like, is Dad going to be there today? Okay, so let him know I can't. I just can't. I can't go through another day of this. But given that, I find it more interesting to help other people talk about what they do.
I think there's something to that. I think giving other people a voice, you're giving me a voice to get my message out. Mm. I think one of the important things that's coming out of this new prison program is we've just expanded it. So I want to get this in there.
Please.
We've just expanded the program. I've just hired two new art therapists to meet the needs of 9 prison settings in the state
of Florida.
All in Florida.
Wow.
It's amazing. We're working with the Department of Corrections educational programming to bring these opportunities for special education, those inmates, youthful offenders, and in special education systems to work through the and mitigate some of the obstacles that are in the way and helping remove those so that they can then succeed. But what I think is so valuable is I'm part of a team of these art therapists, and as we write, as we publish, as we present, it's so important that I'm saying, look, put your names out there. Let's get you out there. We've got to spread this message. And I'm helping them do that. And I'm not saying I have any special talent. And I don't think I have a talent. I have a
heart.
Maybe heart. Maybe a tenacity. Maybe a stubbornness.
I think heart is 99%
of any
endeavor. And it's what you said. Well, you know, I kept at this thing for 20 years. And lo and behold, actually, you know, I got it to work.
Yeah.
Imagine what you can do in the next 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. I'm helping them the next 20 years. I mean, you say that. And what I'm picturing is that these are the art therapists all over the country that are spreading this work. When I started, when I did my first presentation about art therapy in prisons in 94 in the Chicago Art Therapy Conference, there weren't that many art therapists in prisons. And over the years, you know, it's been expanding. There's a lot of us out there across the states.
And what a remarkable and how, it seems to me, appropriate opportunity for art therapy in that kind of setting. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this here a minute ago. We get locked up inside of this world that we have been, has been constructed for us, and we have, you know, the foundation was laid, and we've built that castle up now where perfection is demanded of me at all times, impossible to achieve. Oh, and by the way, if I had a parent or parents who made sure that I was punished severely for every infraction, that is a nightmarish scenario. And you walk in, figuratively speaking, and sometimes literally, but you're, as an art therapist, giving me opportunity to find that voice visually that I can't otherwise demonstrate for you.
That's key. because you're talking about an environment where any type of disclosure of vulnerability and weakness is taken advantage of, either by the system or by the others that are in those groups or sessions or overhear this, and we allow an opportunity to work behind that mask to create a, you know, rebuild a healthier ego, a healthier sense of self. And what's more is you're talking about an environment where they own those labels that are put on them to the point that they can't succeed when they get out.
Right.
The recidivism is so prominent because they hold on to that label of this is an inmate, this is a convict, not this is a person that made a mistake.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
The whole point is the system doesn't accept who they are as people, but when they create an art piece and then you accept that art piece from them, that art piece being an extension of them, you're beginning the process of accepting who they are. We build upon that. I'm not saying it's a transformation automatically. I'm not saying it's going to be a miracle, but we begin the process through a healthy social interaction using the art as a catalyst for connection.
It's called art therapy, and we have one of the best in the field, an educator who has devoted his life to the advancement of other art therapists and the field in general. Dr. David Gossack is our guest. You stay with me. We've got a little bit more time with this guy. He's got to go to like a symposium or something. I don't know. It's important, but you stay with me. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Dave Gossack. You're talking about those incarcerated who are looking for some way of getting out and getting past, and you're talking about recidivism. I had a very good friend years ago who'd been in prison on two occasions, repeat offender, and he said to me on his, after he had completed his second sentence, and he'd been in for about 5 years and he had just gotten out, and I went to see him, he said, every con says the most frightening thing is how do I stay out? Mm-hmm. They come out knowing that the chances are
the cards are stacked against them.
Against them. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at this particular application of art therapy in a setting that otherwise tells them, and you said this better than I'm saying it, that they don't belong outside. They belong here.
In some ways, and that's an overgeneralization. I certainly get an opportunity to work with great colleagues inside, other correctional staff. Certainly, I wouldn't be there if they didn't believe that, right? Because they're bringing us in to make these changes. I'm working with some wonderful people at the Department of Corrections, like Anna Schubarth and Melvin Herring, who believe in these things. And we work with social workers and educators and counselors who do believe in this. But we're a small group. And we're bucking up against a system that's been in place for many years.
That's what I'm pointing at, is that system.
But my role is to go in there and say, look, all of us can, you know, we're going to be stronger together or not succeed at all.
Yep.
And the art helps bind people together. It helps connect people. It humanizes them. You're talking about a place where they're overly objectified and dehumanized and marginalized in order to control them. And our role, by using the art process, demarginalizes them, it de-objectifies them, and it rehumanizes them.
Yeah.
You know?
And in that respect, I'm going to broaden our conversation just a bit.
Please.
I took an art appreciation course in my undergraduate studies, Seattle University. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, I'm there as a viewer. I can develop my sense of appreciation. But I had to do a project. know what I did? I made them crepes. I came in with my little portable
See, now I'm hungry.
Burner. Yep, and it worked. I got an A on that project.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. You feed the teacher. I don't care.
And I serve everybody.
High school or college, you feed the teacher. You're getting that A. Let that be a lesson to all of you who take my future
Students,
classes.
Yeah, but you bring me food.
But here's the thing, and this may sound like a cliche. Perhaps it isn't. You know, ultimately, I want this world to put me out of a job.
Yeah.
Right? I think I may be in the only profession where I'm trying to work my way out of
a job. And by the way, if that happens, you and I will do our own radio show together.
I think we should.
Together.
I think we should do...
It'd be great.
Yeah, we'll be the modern-day Tallahassee version.
It'll be Jew and Jewish.
That's right. Ishy. But I think that, you know, you want to put me out of a job? Bring the arts back to school.
Right.
Let everybody invest it at all levels and let people connect with who they are and really identify a sense of self and amongst others and with others. Art is what's going to do that. I believe that. Words are visual.
Yeah.
Words emerge out of visual symbols.
Yeah.
The letter A comes out of the oxen, right? I mean, it's the upside down ox that came from the word Aries, right? I mean, each letter has its own pictorial meaning, and that's how we learn is through pictures. When we learn to read, it's we're learning how to read pictures.
Indeed. When you consider this broader...
I went off in a completely different direction.
Well, I know, that's cool. We're just having fun. But when you consider not just the contributions that art makes to us individually, when we are looking at the role of art in modern culture, okay, and we talk about how we are able to reflect upon who we are as a people. And I try to bring that back here locally when I look at people like Randy and Debbie Breenan.
Mm-hmm.
That helps me better appreciate, is that really who we are? Is that how I look to the outside world?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the role that art plays for us, what we contribute to the role of art in culture, mm-hmm. and what it contributes to us. I'm just teeing that up there for you because
That's a great question. And you know what? Unbeknownst to this conversation, what you've just done is you've set me up to talk about the next and final book.
Oh, perfect.
And this
that
book,
you don't want to write, but you're going to have
to. Well, it's
to.
Done. It's now done. Okay. And it's in pre-production with Oxford University Press.
Yes.
And it's called The Frenzied Dance of Art and Violence.
Wow.
And the book is based on the interrelationship that exists between art and violent expression, violent personas, violent environments. And the book is it's not an art therapy book, but it took an art therapist to write it, is the way it was presented to me. And it includes 85 images, including works by Caravaggio and Cellini and Dali and Pollock and Richard Dadd and Van Nath and Bill Traylor and Norman Rockwell, believe it or not. And who certainly illustrated his own violent surroundings of what was going on during, during the 60s and 70s. And, you know, all of them, and also I have a couple of chapters on the art of serial killers, which totally threw the whole book into a whole different realm.
It skewed a little bit differently.
It skewed everything because they didn't figure into the equation, but with them removed, the whole notion is art gets fed by aggressive drives and violence, so to speak. I mean, there's violent explosions that occur in our work, violent need to express ourselves. It also allows us to mitigate and turn aside violence and rechannel it and sublimate it. So while it's fed from these types of energies, it also helps mitigate it and turn it aside.
Remarkable. This is tragic. This is the moment at which I begin to tear up. Because we have to say goodbye.
I know.
You just got here.
I'm gonna go do a piece of art now.
I mean, you know that is. I know you're humoring me.
No. I wouldn't do that.
No,
not
but
out
at the
loud.
Same time,
not in front of you.
Not in front of me. But at the same time, that speaks to what I often think is missing in our daily lives. That we don't give ourselves opportunity for expression.
Yeah.
Now, of late, I'm into landscaping. Okay, so I'm out there just busting my tail, building stuff and putting up block walls and putting in ponds and all this kind of stuff, and I just work myself until I can't even walk. But I'm telling you, I feel great afterwards, and I'm not beating my dog anymore, which is a helpful sign.
It scares me, but
and my dog really appreciates the fact that
you're manifesting a visual image. Yeah. I mean, you're creating something,
expression.
And it's taking energy. And if you didn't have an aggressive drive to do that, it wouldn't succeed.
Well, folks, I am so glad
we did this was a blast.
We did get this opportunity. It's been too long.
It has been.
We didn't even get to talk about all the different places you're going to be around the world. And
you've got symposiums.
And you got he's a keynote speaker for the. Do yourself a favor. Do this. Go to any place online. He's all over the internet. If you want to just Google Dave Gussack, and it's G-U-S-S-A-K, be on the lookout for this next final book that he has composed. Looking forward to it, and looking forward to the next opportunity that you and I will have to talk further. Right?
We will definitely do that.
Right. Our good friend and the friend of many, David Gussack.
Thank you.
And you take care, my friend. Good to have you with us. So there you have a conversation with Dr. David Gussack talking about his upcoming book. And you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me. We've got more coming up after the top of the hour.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, always available online at any time. You'll find us at TallahasseeTalks.com. And of course, as I'm fond of reminding you, you have in our archive all of those broadcasts we've had the good pleasure of bringing to you in our 10 years. Now in February here, we kick off our 11th season. And now what's remarkable is I look older. Carl looks more youthful. I'm not sure how that works, except that, I don't know, he just looks, maybe it's because I'm getting so much older, everybody looks that much younger. But Carl, I'm telling you, you're doing great. You're looking good. Yeah, he doesn't take compliments well, so it's okay. It's true. He's doing great. And we're glad to have Carl serving as our executive director, executive producer and director, and everything else we can throw at him. It does a fine job for us, has from our inception. He has been at the helm, and 10 years and now counting into our 11th season. It's been quite a ride, and we are blessed to have such fine guests as we have with Dave Gussack. If you didn't get to hear that, once again, you can go to the archive or tune in again Sunday afternoon on Moose Magnificat. We're available there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Moose. That's Eastern time if you're living in some other part of the world. Or you can listen in on Wednesday at 5:30 on Moose. Moose Magnificat is the radio station for Tallahassee, bringing you all local musicians playing their original songs all the time. We call it the Sound of Tallahassee, streaming radio to your phone, to your laptop, to your tablet. Yeah, even to your car head unit, you know, if you've got Bluetooth. Or a lot of light internet radios now are part of the whole late model vehicles that have internet radios in the head unit. Anyway, that's what we do, and you can download the free app. If you go to moosemagnificat.com, go to the listen page, and there's the link for your Android or your Apple device, either way. And it's free. And, of course, not only that, but you know, we the advertising that does run is simply part of the station's programming. Like any radio station, you're going to have advertisers that support what we are doing with this fine radio station, and it is remarkable to find people like Royce Lovett. Now, he's going to be with us next week. By the way, if you didn't know this, Royce has relocated himself and his family. They're living in Seattle, the great Pacific Northwest, which is my hometown. Born in 1955 in Seattle, Washington, and grew up there. Got older there. I don't know if I ever grew up. In any case, attended Seattle University and then found my way to Florida State University in 1978. 4 years of graduate education in sociology, master's level, doctoral level, and gee, what a trip that was. I won't bore you with the details. It's just suffice to say that I have often thought about how those many years ago, that four-year stint was, some kind of hazing process, or I don't know, I liken it to some kind of military duty or serving in some foreign land in some capacity. It was really a mess, to be honest with you, because the graduate program at Florida State University in sociology in those days, I mean, they were just a mess. It's not me saying that. I mean, they were, and I am saying that, but I had a lot of other people come back to me and say, wasn't that just bizarre? They just didn't have it all together. In fact, I had one faculty member who was at the time serving as their department chair, and he called me some many years later, probably in the late 80s, and wondering, what was your experience like? I thought that was interesting that he was even asking the question, but apparently there'd been a lot of people that had talked about just how bizarre that whole thing was. Education itself, and Dr. Gusak has been with us so many times, he was with us there in this first hour of the show, but when you talk to people like Gusak, who have in mind the welfare of the student and all of the other activity coming along with that faculty position is really secondary, or it certainly doesn't take precedence over the needs of the student. Well, that was not the case, unfortunately, for students in that program at that time. We seemed to feel like we were always getting in the way of people advancing their academic career. Not an uncommon tale, of course, but we're about bringing you the very best we can in uplifting you and bringing you news of good things happening and the people who make that happen, right? And so Jan Smith is going to be with us here in this second hour. And it's a remarkable thing, too, because in this period of time, this time that we're in now, we're all reeling from all of the heartbreak of being torn up, and just the threat of this virus, and at the same time the threat of the economic loss, the upheaval. It's all of the many layers of consequence that go into this. It's not just your own personal health; it's the health of the community at large. Whether, to extend that idea, our economic well-being and our cultural and social well-being. When people are kept from doing the things that they really love to do, there's no question about the social, psychological impact of that. And it's not good. It is not good. So we're dealing with that as a community, as we are as a nation, no doubt, and across the world, of course. When you look at TC Chorus and you look at the people like Jan Smith who volunteer their time, just keep pushing forward as best they can, it really speaks of these folks who are heroic in their efforts. And by the way, that leads me to say, we are taking it upon ourselves to identify those unsung heroes among us So much so that we've established what we have called the UNCE Awards. And the UNCE Awards, in its inaugural year, will identify 25 unsung heroes in Tallahassee. And we have our three-member panel of judges who will be receiving your nominations for people that you would have recognized, would want to see recognized as an unsung hero, somebody who gives tirelessly, not looking for a whole lot of attention, in fact, really shying away from that. And whether they're paid or not, they give themselves wholeheartedly to the welfare of others, to the achievement of something that benefits as many people as possible for the greatest period of time. Those are the unsung heroes that we're going to be saluting with our UNCE Awards. We'll give you more details as we go forward in the weeks ahead. Be on the lookout for those 25 people you probably will never know. Those are the UNCE Award heroes in Tallahassee. Stay with me.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Jan Smith is a retired attorney and enjoying life as a singer in the Tallahassee Community Chorus. Not sure if those two are mutually exclusive. I think you can enjoy life as a retired attorney. So, okay. And it happens that she is one of those many voices, 200 plus voices, I always fond of saying, because that's a, you know, sort of a moving target. Sometimes it's close to 300. Right now, I think it's probably in the mid 200s. But regardless of the exact number, the Tallahassee Community Chorus continues to wow us with their wowness. And as it turns out, Jan Smith is not only a rather talented singer in this fine group of musicians and vocalists and such, she's president of the dedicated board of directors. And that really says a lot, because when it comes to working with an organization of this magnitude and its history, and the number of people involved, there are CEOs that are working fewer hours and getting paid a whole lot more than if you were the president of the Tallahassee Community Chorus. So then that begs the question, and we're going to get into that with our guest, Jan Smith. How are you, Jan?
I'm great. How are you?
You're looking great.
Thanks.
And at this chilly time of year when we're huddled around a warm LED light bulb, I suppose. Here you are, and if I'm not mistaken, 12 years in. You started as president with the chorus 2010, and that's a pretty good run, 12 years, and you haven't, I mean, I guess you've lapped yourself a couple of times in the process, see yourself coming or going. But you, and I love the fact that this is part of my description of you, that you're a student and volunteer with OLLI, or OLLI, I guess they call it, OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, which is a program over there at Florida State University, which is really for people like me who are over 25, let's say, who have already established oneself in some career path, but are looking for ongoing opportunities. And that's implied, the Lifelong Learning Institute, as it's referred to, serving there, she is, as chair of Ollie's Culture and Arts Subcommittee, like she didn't already have enough to do. But anyway, in addition to all of these activities, it happens that Jan is blessed with many rich friendships and friends who are rich. Well, this is good. That she has forged over the years. She loves to travel whenever she can get out of town. It's always a good day for Jan. And when it's relatively safe to do so, she's a fancier of fine wine and walks with friends and, of course, the obligatory sunsets at beach time, whatever. Yeah, right. So sometimes all of that comes together in one swift move in which you get to do all of those kinds of things. You've got a friend, you're hanging out at the beach and reflecting on all that you've done in your career and in your lifetime. Personally, I look at you and think that you have pursued all of those things that were important to you, that you didn't get to. You didn't have to say, gee, I always wanted, you know, to do that. Or did you? Do you have anything in your life where you kind of go, you know, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to do that?
Well, I wanted to be a cowboy.
See, that was my thing. I wanted to be a cowboy. We both wanted to be cowboys. Yeah.
I knew we had something in common.
Well, we have a lot in common. We love TC Chorus.
Yes.
I like fine wine, and I like walks on the beach.
There you go.
So, okay, we're doing good here. If, in fact, you look back through what was, I think, a rather substantial career as an attorney, and may I add, for the sake of our audience, this is a person who was very practical, I would say, very applied in terms of her skills as an attorney. You worked within the program, Florida's program in the application of the Lemon Law, right? The administration of that program. So you ran that whole shooting match, being the cowboy that you are, six guns and all. Tell us about that. How did that come about, I guess?
Oh, well, that all kind of started in the late 80s. The program was instituted by a legislative change that occurred in 1989, and I saw the job advertised. I was at the time working at the then Department of Labor, Unemployment Appeals Commission, and I was kind of looking for something different to do and saw the ad for that and thought, oh, that sounds interesting, because it was going to be a new arbitration program, brand new. So you could get in on the ground floor of something that was just starting. And so I interviewed and I got hired. And I was hired initially to be sort of the general counsel of that group. The person who was running the program then, Dr. Phil Nowicki, he was a Lemon Law expert.
Yeah.
He was not an attorney, so they wanted an attorney there kind of to be handle the kind of legal part. So
sure.
I was told, go in this room with no windows and write the rules for the arbitration program. And that was the first thing I had to do.
Plus, wow.
That
sounds like the graduate record exam or something.
Yeah, it was sort of like that. You know. And I got to know a lot of other people all over the country who were doing similar things.
How cool is that?
Borrowed a lot from them, and we put the program together, and we recruited our first group of citizen arbitrators who were just people, from all walks of life, who made up arbitration panels and resolved these disputes between people who buy new cars and new trucks and new RVs that proved to be defective over time, with serious problems.
Yes.
The citizen arbitrators would resolve those disputes between the consumers and the motor vehicle manufacturers.
Uh-huh.
Not the dealers. It was the manufacturers, because it's a warranty enforcement law, basically.
Sure.
So we trained the arbitrators how to do that. We did a training every year. And when Dr. Nowicki left, After a little while, I was appointed the director of the program.
Wow.
So, and I was in that position for many years.
Yes.
And retired from it several years ago.
Yes, and that was prior to you taking the helm at TC Chorus, or about the same time?
Yeah, I started the job in 89, and I joined the chorus in 89.
Okay.
Because I was looking for something. I knew this was going to be a stressful kind of job. And I was looking for something to do that would be give me some kind of an outlet, you know, something else.
Yeah,
And I saw a sign in Publix that said, "Do you like to sing? Join the Tallahassee Community Chorus." And the chorus was just starting then. It had become officially incorporated and had a board then, and it was... the board was trying to get people to sign up to sing.
So that was about 20...
That was 34 years
ago. Yeah, that was like 90.
It was 89,
somewhere in there. Okay.
Fall of 89.
Wow.
And I stood in line with a bunch of people wrapped around the corner of St. John's Episcopal Church.
Waiting
and
to go
signed
in
up
and
to sing.
Sign up.
Yeah, and it said you didn't have to audition. That
Yay.
Was the selling point. And so we all got in this room, and in walked Dr. Andre Thomas.
Oh, man.
A much younger Dr. Andre Thomas, were we all.
What a treasure. What
a
treasure.
It just kind of all bloomed from there.
How cool
was
that?
Really marvelous.
Folks, we're talking with Jan Smith here and getting some of the backstory as to how this wonderful TC Chorus, as we have come to know it, and her involvement over the many years. You stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Whidden Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Whidden Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Whidden's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Whidden Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Whidden Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Jan Smith. She is the president of the Tallahassee Community Chorus, which for its history has not only wowed local audiences, has established itself worldwide, several continents. I mean, certainly domestically, but they've been to Europe, I think, a couple of times? Or was, you know...
More than a couple.
More than a couple. And then there was the trip to China.
Yeah.
When you talk about, at least when I think of, those organizations in Tallahassee that have represented more of who we really are, it goes well beyond collegiate athletics, which is certainly worthy of all kinds of accolade, and that's fine. But I remember moving to Tallahassee, you know, 4 decades ago and being told, well, the only thing going on in town is Florida State football. And this was right at the beginnings of the Bowden era. And so even at that, it was sort of not what it was or what it would become.
Too.
Yeah. So here comes the TC Chorus, and unlike other organizations that have helped to fill out our dance card, you know, we've taken what I would say is a more proactive stance on that world stage. And what I love about it, Jan, is that it's not as much by design. This isn't a PR firm or even Visit Tallahassee that's pushing us out there to say, come on, you know, put your nice clothes on now. We're going to go meet the public. No, this is coming from people like Jan Smith, who, heaven's sake, saw a poster in the grocery store and said, yeah, I like to sing. Let's go do this. And then you fall in love. You fall in love with the music. You fall in love with the people. And let's talk about Andre Thomas for a minute, because had there not been an Andre Thomas, I doubt seriously that we'd be having this conversation.
Yeah, that's probably true. He was really the driving force in the musical development of the chorus. He had a vision, you know, for where he wanted the chorus to go at the time. Prior to him coming, what started out as the chorus was a small group of about 37 singers from the community who kind of joined with the FSU choirs for various things.
And I see.
That's how the affiliation with Florida State kind of began.
Clayton
Crabill was the one who kind of started the whole idea of forming a community type of chorus.
Right.
And it kind of picked up from there with Dr. Thomas. He grew the chorus to the numbers that it has become and also kept the relationship with FSU's College of Music strong. It's been an amazing affiliation, and we still enjoy that. I mean, we learned so much from him. He made us all better singers.
And I think
gave us, you know, helped us obtain the reputation that we have.
Yes. And more mindful of what you really are capable of doing.
Yes, definitely.
Right?
I mean, it always amazed me how a group of people from all over the area.
Yes.
I mean, we had people, eventually we had people coming from as far west as Apalachicola and up into Alabama and Georgia and east of here just to sing with the chorus. And we'd all walk in that room, strangers to each other, with varying levels of musical ability, as you might imagine and as you know. And we have these huge choral pieces to learn in a short period of time, you know, big requiems and oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And we always managed to do it. And because he was such a good teacher,
yes,
you know,
he was.
That at his
and
core,
is.
That
yes.
is always what he is.
Yes.
And he was nurturing and he taught us and we learned it. And you know, he wasn't always happy with us back in the day when he was younger. It was, you know,
Thomas have any sharp objects around him.
No sharp objects.
No knives, no bricks.
Only the watch.
Yeah, you could throw the watch at
the
me.
The watch would go periodically. But, you know, he made us into the chorus that we are.
Indeed.
And even with every year, the people coming would be different.
Yeah.
You know, and even in January, when we would take in new folks, we'd get an influx of new people.
Yeah.
And they just would be get absorbed and become part of the community, and it always works.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It is amazing, and it speaks to how music, I think, and see if you agree, transcends all kinds of barriers.
Yeah.
I mean, cultural, generational, economic. It to me, and it's not me saying this because it's a lot of people, and certainly it's been an historical determination over the centuries that music itself is transformational. You know, it really brings us in touch with who we are, I think, more so individually and collectively. And there's something that happens. You know, I see it as an audience member. I participated as a performer long before I was involved with TC Chorus as a member. I did a lot of stage performance and in operettas and different things. There's a kind of energy that comes about when you're in performance and you step off of that stage and it has changed you. Yeah.
That's very true. And it's in a chorus. There's a lot of energy that goes between the chorus and the conductor.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Thomas and Dr. Hannawalt, they both conduct a lot with their facial expressions.
Yes.
You know, and they're so, both of them, such very expressive.
Emotive,
and
I would say.
Conductors
that
you could tell right away what they wanted from you. And and the chorus would give it to them. You know, it's just amazing just to experience that.
You know, the last time we talked about the chorus on this show, it was with Dr. Hannawalt.
Right.
And I regret that I was the only one who could see it in his eyes as I said to him, you know, it is wonderful for you to expect your singers to achieve something, but I said, Michael, you convey to them the notion that they are giving something back to you.
Right.
And
that's
there is, and it speaks to what you're talking about, that there's this sort of reciprocal or exchange of energy and ideas and passion and excitement and, yes, anger. And sometimes the music is just that way. The score itself is asking you to grab every last corpuscle you have and put it out there. And there's that magic, isn't there, with a guy like Hannawald or his predecessor, Dr. Mm-hmm. Thomas. When you think about where you are today, and we're going to talk a little bit about the current status of things and some of the heartbreak that you're having to endure with the postponement of this planned January concert here, Unity 16, I want you to think in terms of what you see going forward, maybe even the next 5 to 6 months. If you can help us out, try to help us put the pieces together as we imagine with you. No question about the fact TC Chorus is going to be fine, but it's the rest of us. We're brokenhearted because we love you and we love being able to participate in these performances. Folks, just in case you didn't get the word, Unity 16 was planned for the month here, originally for January 30th, and it has been postponed and it's going to be rescheduled in 2023. So we're going to talk at length about that with our good friend and our guest today, Jan Smith. You stay with me.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Well, so the bad news is Unity 16 ain't happening.
Yeah.
It's already behind us.
Right.
And reading from the TC Chorus website, public statement, out of concern for the health and safety of our performers and the patrons, this concert has been canceled for this season. Subscribers and ticket purchasers will receive a separate notification and giving them their ticket options, which means if I bought tickets, I may just tell you, you know what, I don't need a refund, just pay it forward somehow.
Yeah, and a number of our ticket purchasers have done that. We're so appreciative of them for that. In fact, I would say most of the folks who purchased tickets have said that, and it's just been very gratifying. And we're very thankful for their support in
Indeed.
That way.
Indeed. Isn't it remarkable, Jan? They're coming at you and going, no, we'll get past this.
They are.
That's got to feel good.
Yeah, it does. They're wonderful people. And many of them are folks who have been our patrons for many years. Hmm. So, you know, it's the second time we've had to ask, you know, for that since the pandemic started, because it's the second time we've had to cancel a concert.
Pull out, yeah.
And both times the response has been amazingly giving on the part of our patrons, and it's just been it's very heartening.
Yes,
to
it
know
is.
That they're Indeed. Still out there,
Indeed.
And they still love us.
Indeed,
and we can't wait to see them again.
Well, you know, and there's that, and so with that in mind, we do have another concert coming to us in April. Yes, we're gonna believe for the very best outcome here. And this is scheduled for April 24th. It's a Sunday at 4 o'clock. Very customary for the chorus to hold their concerts on Sundays in the afternoon at Ruby Timon Concert Hall. You can go to their website now if you haven't already and buy your tickets. Now, tell us about this. It's entitled I Shall Give Peace, and it's featuring Dona Nobis Pacem, which is Ralph Vaughan Williams, with the Carmina Pax, and there's a bunch of other things in here I'm not going to try to read. tell us about this concert.
Well, it was part of kind of the theme for the season, which was, you know, we started out with Haydn's The Creation, kind of the return, you know, the brand new world.
Back in November, yeah.
And Unity was going to focus on the storm-like impact of the pandemic and the social issues that were kind of exacerbated by some of that. And then we're ending the season with I Shall Give Peace. Uh-huh. It's a kind of a call to peace and the peace that comes with reconciliation. That's kind of what Dona Nobis Pacem is all about. And also the Carmina Pax is a newer work by Randall Stroop. That's new to us, not new to Dr. Hannawalt, but it focuses on the many different forms of conflict from which peace can be found, either in the resolution or even in the suffering. There's a form of peace, and it's a very dramatic, beautiful work. And then Deep Peace is another work that focuses on the peace that can be found in nature, and that's by Elaine Hagenberg. So the concert will feature those three works with our orchestra, of course, and Dr. Marcia Porter and Evan Jones, both from the FSU College of Music, will be our soloists for those pieces, and they're both wonderful.
I've heard them sing.
Yeah.
You mentioned this earlier in our conversation, the fact that you have this relationship with FSU and choral studies and the music department, it affords you this bridge where you've got these marvelous vocalists who themselves are already skillful and they are pursuing the development of their talents and their career. And so you have this ready-made invitation, I suppose, to them that says, come and sing with us.
Yes, and that's been glorious. I mean, the students are wonderful, the choral students and the music students and the graduate students particularly have been just an invaluable asset to the chorus for all our many years. Two of them typically serve as assistant conductors.
There you
for
go.
The conductor.
Right.
And this year we have two first-year graduate students, one of whom, Corey Sullivan, has been singing with us for many years.
Uh-huh.
You know, we know Corey. He's part of the community.
Neat.
And the other, Ramon Cardenas, joins us from California.
How cool.
So he's way far away from home. And they're both wonderful, and we learn a lot from them. They will conduct, I think, probably the Carmina Pax, maybe their assignment for this concert, because I'm waiting for them to send me the marked score so we can upload it. So that will be a lot of fun, and they're great to work with. And over the years, we've had excellent assistant conductors, most all of whom have gone on to wonderful jobs in universities
Indeed.
All over the world,
Indeed.
Basically.
And, yeah, it's a working laboratory, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and, you know, we still keep in touch.
Yep.
You know, we hear from them, we keep up with them, and they keep
How
up
cool.
with us. So
How
it's
cool.
really kind of, they're all part of the family.
It is, in fact, this extended family. Mm-hmm. I've always been curious, too, about the soloist. Is that an auditioned sort of situation? These are people
sometimes,
try out for?
Sometime. In this situation, the two soloists are faculty at FSU, so they, Dr. Hannawalt invited them.
I see.
They don't have to audition.
But they were told.
They were asked. They were asked. And
they were asked
graciously
nicely.
Accepted. And Marcia has, they both sung with us before.
Cool.
And Marcia went to China with us.
Oh, neat.
And was very ill and sang anyway. She was a trooper.
Wow.
But he will also at times announce that auditions will be held for the soloists.
Okay.
So for the first concert, those soloists were all students, and they were all auditioned soloists, and they were all wonderful.
Yes.
You know, the talent, the musical talent, and the depth of it in this town is just... It's amazing.
It is striking.
It really, truly is.
I wanted to offer this too for those who are still getting to know you. This website is a great way to do it. TCChorus.org is the place to go.
Yeah, and we also have a YouTube channel where you can catch a lot of that.
Gotcha.
And also, there's a link on the website to the YouTube channel.
I'm seeing that.
Yeah.
And nice.
There are also some testimonials and remarks there by Dr. Hannawalt and members of the chorus talking about their experiences. And
how cool.
So it's a really nice nice thing.
Cool. As it turns out, there's not too much more we need to say, I suppose, at this moment about TC Chorus and its contributions. For my good friend Jan Smith, who graciously agrees to let me drag her in here, because this is not her thing. She works 24/7, and she just doesn't like a whole lot of, you know, attention and stuff. And I have to tell you, thank you. There are at least 200 plus voices out there who are grateful that you decided so many years ago to have respond to that poster in the grocery store. And I look forward to what else is up ahead for you, my friend.
Thank you very much, Brian.
A pleasure having Jan Smith with us today. Folks, that's what I do for you here each week. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio, featuring all local musicians playing their original songs all the time. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.